Today on Vox Talks Economics, how can we use AI to make economic research more efficient? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week, we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. Have you used ChatGPT yet? You probably have. And if you're a teacher, well, I could tell you your students definitely have. We've reached a moment at which large language models, of which ChatGPT is the most obvious, have clearly become useful, but useful for what exactly? Anton Korinek of the University of Virginia and Brookings Institution, he joins me today because he has just written a paper with at least 25 answers to this question. Anton, welcome back to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, Tim. It's a pleasure to be back on air with you.
This is really interesting. The first thing I have to ask you, Anton, is why on earth write a paper like this?
Yeah, that is indeed a very good question. This is not the kind of paper that I, as an academic economist, can publish in the AER or something like that.
Nope.
But honestly, the reason why I wrote it was because last fall, when I saw the first set of these models come out in beta tests, I experienced a little bit of a crisis. I realized that these models can automate so much of what I'm doing in my daily work. And I really wanted to wrap my head around what is going on, how this rapid progress will affect, first of all, me personally as an economic researcher,
yeah,
but also cognitive workers more broadly. And so I thought, well, if I spend time thinking about these questions, why not write it up and make it more accessible for economists at large?
Well, you only have to look at Twitter, Anton, to see that many of your colleagues, many of my colleagues as well, are having a similar sort of crisis. This has hit very close to home and has suddenly become something that, well, everyone's thinking about, everyone's talking about in our business.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the dividing date between when AI was something that we speculated and talked about and AI was something that we really took seriously about our jobs. That was the 28th of November, 2022, I think. Tell me what happened then.
Oh, yes, that's when ChatGPT was released to the public.
Yeah, in history to be known as ChatGPT Day, I suppose, isn't it? Now, it's the one we're all talking about. Have you used it? What did you use it for? Did it work for you?
Mm-hmm.
Is it at the moment the only one of these large language models? Is it the only game in town?
Well, you know, my day of crisis was actually September 26, 2022. That's when I organized a conference on the governance of transformative AI, and our keynote speaker demonstrated a competing model, Anthropic's Claude, and I was really impressed by what that model could do. It's a little different from ChatGPT. It's kind of difficult to compare their strengths and weaknesses, but it is perhaps even a little bit more powerful than the current version of ChatGPT. That's when I really started to think about this question in serious, and when I realized that this is going to have really broad effects on cognitive workers across all domains, not just economics, but also, as you observed, in journalism, anywhere where we are doing cognitive work.
What we talk about today might seem faintly ridiculous in 6 months' time because these are all works in progress and probably not far from where you are, not far from where I am in central London. There are probably people working in labs on equally powerful, more powerful models even now. Sounds like, and having read your paper, it reads like you are not one of the economists who so far come out with the opinion that these large language models are just overhyped. I see it's rather famously being described as a stochastic parrot.
What I realized when I first started interacting with these models is if we want to understand how our capabilities, the capabilities of human brains, relate and compare to the capabilities of these language models, we really need to kind of adjusts our understanding of the world a little bit. One way of doing so is to say, well, what these models are doing is really, really amazing. Another way of doing so is to recognize that what our brains do, even though it feels so phenomenal to be alive and to be thinking, but is at some level maybe not quite as amazing as we thought and maybe actually easier to replicate than we thought just a year ago. I've come to the conclusion, probably to a very significant extent, I am a stochastic parrot.
We ought to explain a little bit. I think probably everybody knows that the way it works is you can ask it questions just by sort of typing in a sentence. And as long as the question is reasonably structured, it comes back with something that looks good. We'll go into the strengths and weaknesses of what it comes back with in a minute. But one thing you brought out in the paper is that something like ChatGPT is a class of AI called foundation models. Can you explain what they are and why they're important?
Yeah, so foundation models are the natural continuation of the deep learning paradigm. And they are essentially very large models, models that in their complexity approach the complexity of the human brain. And these large language models are perhaps the leading category of these foundation models. The way that they work is you create an extremely large neural network, billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions, and perhaps soon trillions of parameters. You spend, I almost want to say, obscene amount of funding on compute, that means on computing power, to pre-train the model using vast quantities of data that is scraped from the internet, from Wikipedia, books, all kinds of sources of human knowledge. And as the model gets trained, it tries to make sense of all the data it is fed in loss minimizing way. And as it is making sense of all this text it is fed, and this is now for language models specifically, there are other foundation models that work on like images or other stuff. But if you teach a foundation model that is trained on text, it creates something like a world model inside of that neural network. A model that tries to make sense of all the text it is fed, that tries to understand the interrelationships of all the concepts that show up in the entire body of human text that humanity has created. And I think that's what makes them so powerful.
And certainly worthy of discussion, because one thing I also want to clarify before we get into what's in your paper, these 25 suggested ways in which we can use ChatGPT, is that we're not having one of those discussions that we've been having for years about what AI might potentially do. These are things that you have already investigated.
Yes, these are 25 use cases that it can already do that I use on a daily basis in my work. And as you observed, most graduate students are already using on a daily basis. And I want to suggest that all economists should be using to make their work as effective and efficient as possible and to make progress faster. I think we have seen this phenomenal progress in AI in computer science in the past few years, and the social sciences, including economics, really have so many questions that this throws up. We need to make sure that we can answer these questions fast, because the problems that these systems are going to throw up are probably quite significant for our society.
I'm ChatGPT. This is an example of the text I generate. I hear you are talking about me. If you want to use me, simply visit the ChatGPT website and type in your question or topic in the chat box. I'll generate a response for you based on my extensive training data. And now, back to the podcast.
I Okay, Anton, well, we haven't got time to discuss all 25 of these ideas. I would really like to, but usefully you've sorted them into six categories, so we can talk about those categories, I guess. And the first one you came up with was ideation, creating ideas. Now,
that's right.
If you ask a language model to come up with ideas, is it coming up with genuinely new ideas to answer a question, or is it just summarizing the arguments that already exist, which is useful, but not quite as good as genuinely new ideas?
Yeah, that's also one of these questions where I really had to ask myself, what does it actually mean to come up with genuinely new ideas? So I remember when I was a graduate student, I came up with what seemed genuinely new ideas to myself a number of times. And my advisor said, oh yeah, this is something that has been written about in this paper from 2 decades ago. And so I think what we humans view as genuinely new ideas, as creativity, is essentially the recombination of existing concepts in ways that are not completely trivial and that are therefore novel. But how trivial or not it is to recombine them depends essentially on your cognitive capabilities. And so in the example with my advisor before, what I found creative was probably rather trivial to my advisor. And I think what language models are doing, the previous generation certainly couldn't do what I would call creative, but the current generation of models is already able to combine existing concepts in non-trivial ways that actually satisfy my definition of creativity.
This is so challenging to think about, isn't it?
It is,
now,
yeah.
Writing as well. Now, this is something that a lot of people would have already experienced. You've got examples in your paper of how ChatGPT has been able to turn your rough notes into some pretty good text, and also first drafts into very nice looking text. And you point out this is especially useful for people who are writing in English but speak English as an additional language. Is this already high enough quality that, for example, we could use this to generate entire articles or papers?
At this point, I would say that it can probably already generate some short articles. It can't quite generate papers yet.
Yeah.
So for short articles, and maybe not quite ChatGPT, but other systems that are already developed, they actually have the capability to write like a full, let's say, 1,000-word coherent article on some topic that you give it. For academic papers that are like 50 pages long, they don't quite have the level of depth and also the ability to stay on message for 50 pages. So I, as a researcher, don't have to be worried about these systems quite yet. As of March 2023, progress in this area is happening so quickly that I have given up trying to project a date when I expect them to be able to write at the level that I write.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that at some point in my working lifetime, I'm going to wake up and find out that they are writing articles at least as good as what I can write.
Now, me too.
Background research, that's another thing that maybe some of the audience have tried already, but I have tried this, and I've noticed that when it comes to doing things like summarizing papers, it's probably already better than I am at it, and it's a lot quicker, that's for sure.
Yeah, certainly quicker than us, right?
Should we still be cautious about that, or can we just outsource jobs like that to the language models?
I think for summarizing, we can already be pretty confident in their results. There are a few other tasks related to background research where we really can't quite trust them yet. And that has to do, for example, with coming up with references. These systems, when they make up stuff, we use the word, they hallucinate. And it feels like imagine you are at an oral exam and you are forced to say something because you know that if you don't say anything, you will fail. But if you say something, there is at least some chance that you will hit upon something that's right. It feels like the systems are generating text in that kind of mode.
Yeah.
And if you ask them to, for example, tell you about the existing literature, they sometimes start out with something that actually exists, but quite regularly start to hallucinate and make up references.
Yes, I did ask one of these language models to come up with a paper on how you can use language models in economics. And it did give me a pretty good sounding example of a paper that it completely made up.
I've experienced many examples like that.
Coding. I would be delighted if language models were good at coding because I'm hopeless at it. If they can debug my code or write my LaTeX for me, which is something that many economists would be pleased never to have to do again, then that would be great. Can they do this already?
They're quite impressive at coding tasks, and they're certainly at the level where they can save researchers a lot of time. And I think the way to understand it is, this is the one thing that's the most useful to the AI labs generating these tools.
Yeah.
So I've heard estimates that professional coders can save up to 50% of their time by using these language models for code generation. I should say generating code is something where they save a lot of time, but where they definitely still need oversight. So they generate stuff and we humans need to discriminate whether that is actually what we wanted it to do or not. But even so, it saves you a lot of typing. And one of the things I think that people may find interesting, if it generates something and it's not quite up to par, oftentimes it helps to tell the system in which direction to adjust it, and then it regenerates it, and then you can massage it around until you get what you want. And that's really powerful. I think one of the reasons why these advances in AI have happened at such a fast pace over the past half year is because the labs are increasingly using coding tools to make progress faster.
Yeah.
And internally, they have access to even better tools than what we outside the labs have access to.
I was having this conversation with some professional coders. I expected at least some of them to say, this isn't doing it right. And there really was nothing like that at all. For some of the more tedious and mundane tasks, never have to do it again and just generate that code.
Yeah, and at this point, most of our economic models are still so complicated that it needs some human input as well. Mm-hmm. So again, we don't need to be worried about being automated right now, but they definitely make us much more productive and allow us to make progress faster.
Now, talking of tedious and mundane jobs, you've also looked into how language models can help with data analysis and data extraction. I've discussed this many times on Vox Talks when we've done economic history papers. A huge part of the job there is taking text and extracting data from it. This is just the case for so much of the data that we see these days. Mm-hmm. You've been trying out these models to see how good they are at extracting data or formatting data. How good are they?
They are quite powerful at that. Mm. So I think a really good task for language models is if we want to extract structured data from written text.
Yeah.
And that can save a lot of time. It's the kind of work that a lot of people outsource to undergraduate students. And language models can do this essentially on one click.
Yeah, and unlike undergraduate students, they don't require lunch breaks. They don't go home in the evening. It's a big change because for many of us as students, our first introduction, how we learnt about how you work with data, was to have to do the most boring jobs.
They are important kind of entry-level jobs into the research process where students can get some exposure and they are being automated away really fast.
Yeah. And the final category here, which I was quite surprised at, is you were looking at how good they are at maths. And one question you investigated was, can a language model set up my economic model for me? How well did it do at that?
Yeah, let me say, at first I thought this is something that these models definitely can't do.
That's what I was thinking as well.
And I was surprised at how well they actually did. Well, so I asked it to solve a consumer optimization problem, which is really something quite specific, nerdy for economists. Mm-hmm. And you know, the question why I was interested in is because I consider myself an economic theorist whose main skill is writing up and deriving good economic models. I should say that the current version of GPT and ChatGPT can do a little bit of that, and maybe just enough to save time when we are like writing undergraduate problem sets, mm-hmm. but it's not particularly powerful at it yet. However, I have also recently tried asking the same questions to the new Bing, or Sydney as its codename is, and it's already significantly more capable at the exact same questions that I analyzed in the paper 6 weeks ago. This is really something where I could see this rapid progress happening within a matter of weeks, and something that is very important to my identity as an economist. So I found that quite impressive.
Yes, these things are fundamental to our self-image, our feelings of what we're good at. And this is very challenging. And that's maybe one reason why people have seized on this problem that we've already mentioned before, that sometimes these models do hallucinate. They make up something that sounds credible, but it's just not true at all in any sense.
Mm-hmm.
How big and how persistent a problem do you think this is going to be?
Let me again start with the human analogy. When I converse with colleagues of mine and I veer a little bit outside of their main topic of expertise, I realize that we humans tend to hallucinate a whole lot. Just a couple days ago, I was at a very interesting and fairly interdisciplinary dinner party, mm-hmm. and lots of people opined on lots of things, and I realized, oh wow, there is so much hallucination going on around the table, and this is a really common phenomenon among humans as well. So I think one thing we humans have learned is that if we talk about our areas where we're really considered subject matter experts, we better make sure that this is really watertight. Mm-hmm. And at a dinner party, we can let loose a little bit. And if we are not quite sure about it and we hallucinate, we don't have the same guardrails.
I think
our models, our language models, have yet to learn those guardrails. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I think they are slowly getting better even at that part. Mm-hmm. And it's just another dimension in which their creators need to put some effort in to make sure that that hallucination goes down. Mm-hmm. And yeah, at some level, will it ever completely disappear? Probably not, because we humans, we are also sometimes wrong.
In the meantime, good advice to anyone that is using a model in a way that hallucination might become a problem is always check what it comes up with and states as a fact, because it is so easy to let these things slip through. The old joke about economics used to be that it advanced one funeral at a time. Now we're talking about progress here suddenly in months and weeks. Mm. How rapidly do you think this is going to change in the next 12 months, for example?
The quick answer is extremely rapidly. Mm. And then maybe a slightly longer answer. One thing that we need to keep in mind is that the size of the cutting edge foundation models that we are dealing with here has been doubling every 6 months for the past decade or so. So that means it's quadrupling every year. It's growing by a factor of 1,000 every 5 years. Mm. And what we have all realized this past fall is that the capabilities of these models have suddenly crossed a sort of magical threshold where their behavior and their capabilities feel much more human-like mm-hmm. than they used to before. It's really hard to tell how the next few rounds of doubling are going to feel for us, whether we will suddenly feel that these models are exhibiting intellectual capabilities that are significantly above our own when it comes to like recombining concepts, or whether this is going to feel a little bit more gradual, I have no idea. What we can be quite confident in is that this process of doubling will continue at the same pace. The amount of resources that's pouring into the sector in the aftermath of ChatGPT is enormous, and progress is only pointing in one direction, and the pace of progress even seems to be increasing.
Well, finally, Anton, at a, I suppose, a more mundane level, you could say, but incredibly important as well. A lot of people who listen to this teach students, either at schools, undergraduates. They are legitimately worried that those students, instead of writing answers now, will generate those answers and copy and paste them. And instead of struggling to understand some of the concepts in economics, many of which do take a lot of understanding at the beginning, they will just copy what the model says. Is this a worry for the next generation of economists? Might they lack a certain amount of intellectual depth?
The worry is absolutely fair. What should we humans try to educate the next generation on? What will be useful in a couple of years, even looking ahead decades? So I think it is helpful if we return a little bit to history when we are looking at this question. I went to school in the 80s and 90s, and at that time, my parents were concerned about me getting a good education, a good generalist education. But given my specific skill set, they also really wanted to foster my analytical skills, wanted to expose me to computers so that I learn programming and things like that. Because their idea was that if I learn that stuff, I will have an easier and happier life. And to an important extent, they were probably right about that. Now, somebody growing up 100 years before me probably had parents who were hoping that they would be very strong so that they can work the fields better and so that they can produce a greater yield on their family farm. And yet when I grew up, my parents weren't particularly concerned about me being physically strong, right? So as our economy changed and as the technologies that we are dealing with changed, what we educate our children in has to change. And if our expectation is correct that these models will be able to solve cognitive tasks at significantly higher levels than the human brain at some point in the future, then it really is a question of whether we should still push our children to learn those same tasks and whether that's the most important things in their life. I have pretty young children, a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old, and I think I have resigned myself to the idea that their cognitive capabilities at some level, their ability to do math and to write, will always be dominated by AI systems because they are progressing much faster than my kids. I want to raise them to be happy humans one day in this fantastical AI-powered future in which I hope we will still have a place for humans to be happy and to have some say over our future. So I want them to be happy. I want them to be well-balanced. I want them to know about human culture. I don't particularly care about them being good at deep analytical skills. I don't push them to be the world's greatest mathematicians or stuff like that, because I just don't think that's something that humans will see as their comparative advantage when my kids have grown up.
I'm just a little bit older than you. And when I was doing maths at school, I was not allowed to bring my calculator into class, but I was allowed to bring, I was told to use a slide rule because my teacher told me that if I didn't use a slide rule, then I would never understand how logarithms worked. And I became a happier human being the moment I dropped that slide rule in the bin. These are very important questions. And I think what we're covering on these topics at the moment is profoundly important for the future, not just of our subject, but as you say, of how we educate and how we learn and how we use our knowledge. My mind is slightly blown. It's been fascinating. Thank you very much, Anton.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper that you will undoubtedly need to read, not just once, is called Language Models and Cognitive Automation for Economic Research. And Anton is, of course, the author. You can find it at CPR. It is discussion paper 17923.
Hi, ChatGPT again. This has been a Vox Talk from the Center for Economic Policy Research. They bring you the best new research in economics every week, so subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you liked this episode, I strongly suggest you give it a 5-star review. Next week on Vox Talks Economics, is ESG causing you humans to prioritize gut feel over mainstream economics?